Good morning. Welcome to Encounter Church. I'll start off with a confession. So, I made that bumper long because that little, guitar riff is so good. I just wanted to stand in the dark and kind of dance and no one notice it. It's so good. I don't know if anybody else is, blues, jazz. There's just something about kind of an instrument and just getting lost in it. And you can just feel that. I mean, that I don't know who that was, but wow. It's just amazing. So, it has nothing to do with the message. I just really like that music. So I'm so glad you are here today. Before we jump in, I just want to say a special thank you to an amazing church. I'm so honored. My wife and I thank God regularly that we get to pastor this church, that we get to be with you, because yesterday just reflected just how amazing this church is. Like every single week, so many of you create environments where kids come and they discover that there's a God who loves them, who made them, who's completely reorienting their narratives about who they are and their value and their worth. And people who create these powerful moments on stage and backstage. This church is filled with incredible people who volunteer and give their time sacrificially. And then yesterday, it was just one of those moments where the rest of the community could see how extraordinary this church is. That what you were able to put on, what you and your generosity was able to empower and enable, was one of those kind of events where in the midst of 45 minutes prior to the start of that event, it looked like it was going to become like a boat or seafaring type egg event, and where it was egg hunting and mud bogging simultaneously in some way, shape, or form. And God in his grace, man, the rain stopped and ended up being a beautiful day, and over 1,000-plus families were able to come out and enjoy, 1,000-plus people were able to come out and enjoy a great day, and just hearing the positive comments people were leaving, both on social media and in person, that happened because of you, that we were able to create that moment. And so I just want to say thank you and just kind of give you, awesome. And the added benefit is that more kids left with candy. We helped the dentistry profession yesterday. So, it's just there's so many downstream effects from yesterday. That's just amazing. And special thank you to there is a group of women who have worked tirelessly for months, and they're all humble, so I'm not going to call them out by name and make them come up here. Only get to do that to Justin. but the reality is that they've worked for months to create this event so that it can go off seamlessly. And I really would put that team and the volunteers that they were able to mobilize, I'd put them up against anybody. If we had a castle, I think we could have out-Disney yesterday, okay? I feel that confident in our team. So, yes. And part of it is, we're just excited because next week is the reason we do everything that we do at this church. And it's Easter. And so we're going to have two services. I would encourage you, 9:30 or 11. Both of those services are going to be amazing. We're going to be streaming the second service online for family members. But if you've never invited, you've got maybe a coworker and maybe a neighbor or family member that you've always thought, man, I think if they came to Encounter Church, they would like it. I think they would actually enjoy it, or they would actually be maybe inspired or stirred by it. Easter statistically is the one day of the year that if you invite someone to church, they're going to say yes. And so I would encourage you, if there's somebody that maybe has been on the back of your mind, you keep meaning to, this is the moment, this is the week, just to reach out, text them, call them, say, hey, would you come and sit with me at church this week? I think you would really like it. And our family has fallen in love with it. Our kids love it. And so 9:30 or 11 next week, we're super excited about Easter. But the entire month, actually, our series is called Struggle Bus. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like I have a permanent seat that's assigned on the Struggle Bus. I go through seasons where the Struggle Bus is real, right? And this month, we want to have a conversation about what is the Struggle Bus and how in the world do we get off the Struggle Bus and what do we do when we find ourselves on it. And to start the conversation, I want to take you to Operation Plumbob, which is very similar to SpongeBob, but has nothing to do with SpongeBob, although you could make a random connection that I will not go down the rabbit trail. Operation Plumbob was actually a top secret military exercise that the U.S. government ran in 1957. It turns out, in the midst of the 1940s, we developed the atomic bomb. We end up starting off and kicking off a global race to build more and more powerful nuclear weapons, and we ramped up nuclear weapons drastically. The two bombs that exploded in Japan are minuscule compared to what would happen just in the next 10 years of advancement. And at a certain point, some people started realizing, maybe us doing this and just outside is maybe not the best thing for human beings, because I don't know if you know this, but the mushroom cloud, the Franklin cloud, actually reaches up to about 30,000 feet. So in this picture here, the top of that cloud is 30,000 to 36,000 feet in the air. And what happens at 36,000 feet is that you have winds, jet streams, that take the particles, the radioactive particles, around the globe. In fact, one of the things that scientists began to notice was that there were certain radioactive isotopes that were flung into the air that living organisms began to incorporate into their bodies. And that one of the ways that the debunkers kind of are able to figure out counterfeit art sometimes is if it's been created in the last 60, 70 years, it'll have certain radioisotopes that did not exist in kind of living organisms prior to this. And so some scientists start to realize, hey, maybe we shouldn't be blowing up stuff in Nevada and allowing the winds to carry it around the U.S. Or maybe us sitting up bleachers just down the street from this thing and giving our people, like, sunbathing tanning bed glasses isn't the best idea either. Like, maybe there's a better way. In fact, this actually happened. This is like a declassified photo of the Navy was using a blimp for kind of like studying reconnaissance of a nuclear explosion during Operation Plumbob. And when it blew up, the shock wave that came out of the nuclear explosion just completely caused the blimp to crash. I mean, so a portion of this top secret operation, they started to realize, well, how do we continue to develop and test bombs without it being so devastating? And so they came up with the idea of burying it underground and doing an underground test, which had not been done before. So they began to experiment. And so they dig a hole almost 500 feet deep. And the second test that they do, they actually put like tons and tons of concrete on top of the bomb, buried 500 feet. And the thought is like, man, we've got all this tons of concrete. It's buried 500 feet. And then the last thing they did is they put a manhole cover on top of the hole. And they're like, yep, I think we figured it out. And so they go to detonate the bomb. And in a flash, like microseconds, nanoseconds, the concrete is completely like just turned into vapor and begins to shoot up the 500-foot reinforced column. And finding a 4-inch metal plate there, you can start to realize this sounds a lot like a gun, okay? And so what ended up happening, there's still classified video footage of the moment I'm about to explain, but one of the scientists towards the end of his life who was a part of this, kind of in his late 90s, described one of the most profound moments of this August 27th, 1957 experiment, that they had set up a slow motion camera that was capturing 1,000 frames a second. And the first frame of the 1,000 frames shows just the beginning of the explosion. The second of the 1,000 frame shows the manhole cover at the top of the frame. And he began to sit down and do the math and realize that for the manhole cover to cover that distance in just a thousandth of a second, that it had to be going roughly 125,000 miles per hour. To this day, it is still believed that this is the fastest object human beings have ever propelled. It's the fastest man-made object. And it's theorized that if, because it was six, that's about six times the escape velocity, by the way, of planet Earth. It's theorized that if it did not burn up, which it probably did not, going through the atmosphere, that this thing at this point is the farthest human object in space today. That there is a 4-inch manhole cover flying through outer space right now that was accidentally put up there because of this moment, which is amazing to imagine that there is potentially, because 6X would have allowed it not only to escape Earth's gravity, it would have actually propelled it past the pull of Earth's gravity and would send it straight into a very much a solar system trajectory. It was no orbiting at all. And so I like to imagine, I don't believe in aliens, but if I did, that one day some aliens going to be driving along doing whatever aliens do when they're cruising in the cruise ship, and just they're going to get nailed with this thing. And it's like, thank you, right? I mean, somehow we did this. And so what's fascinating about this whole experiment, besides the fact that I just gave you like three different Jeopardy answers, again, you're welcome, is the fact that all of this was able to happen because of the internal pressure that had built up in a flash. And I don't just think it's manhole covers that blow, that explode from the internal pressure that builds up. I think that you and I know what that's like too. And that you may have different names for that. You may call it being stressed. You may call it about to lose my mind. You might call it on the verge of committing a crime. But this month, we're just going to call it the struggle bus. And the idea of how do we, through the course of our lives, because life has plenty of struggle bus stops that we're forced to walk on, how do we as people bend and not break? How do we as people learn how to survive, and not just survive, but actually thrive in the midst of riding on the struggle bus? And over this month, this is the conversation. In order to start that, what's fascinating is the struggle bus is not something we invented. It's very human. In fact, I want to take you to one of the most compelling statements that Jesus made almost 2,000 years ago. A statement so compelling that we would be tempted to believe it's not even possible. And yet, over the course of this month, I want to help us journey and experience the statement that he's about to unpack for us. It begins like this: come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. He's like, come to me, all of you who are stuck riding on the struggle bus, who feels like there is no stop that you're going to be able to get off. All of you who feel overwhelmed, who feel completely burdened and exhausted by life and the stresses and the pressures of keeping up and measuring up and trying to break through and survive, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened. And I think living in the age that we live in, I think we can all relate to the weary and the burdened. But we all know what it's like to be overwhelmed. In fact, being overwhelmed is so common of an experience. Like, this is one of the, like, enjoyments that my wife and I have, is that we love memes. I mean, that's primarily our love language of communication. If you were to scroll through our text messages, we do have words, but a lot of times they're memes. They're just like different pictures, different images that we send back and forth to capture kind of the day, the moment we're in, what we're experiencing. And I think I'm really funny, so my memes are hilarious. And so this is just like our way of expressing. And one of them specifically is like mom memes. Because if you've never spent time with mom memes, they are amazing. Like, for example, one such mom meme is like, being a mom is like jumping out of an airplane with five other people, including your husband, Four of them, like, do not even know how to open their parachute, and your husband forgot to grab his. And you're flying around trying to pull all of their chutes, giving your parachute to your husband, and then ultimately you hit the ground. But instead of dying when you hit the ground, you have to get up, cook dinner, and do the dishes and wash clothes. And so, like, my wife will regularly, like, say, hey, have you seen this meme? And I'm like, I feel like I should take that personal. Like, I think I would grab my parachute or at least show my kids how to pull it. Or she'll be like, hey, here's a meme about the husband pooping while the wife's doing everything. And I'm like, that feels personal too, right? It's just, it seems to capture life. It's amazing with these personal, like, mom memes. But the reality is that the theme amongst all of them is just overwhelmed. It's just too much. And it's not enough 24/7 with sleep and managing. Just, it seems to not even be possible. And on top of the overwhelmed, we add to it by being overcommitted. I'm in that parenting stage now with 11-year-old who we're encouraging, hey, experiment. Like, we want to help you discover things that you're good at and that you potentially have a passion for. But, like, I mean, sometimes the schedule can be like a buffet, right? Where it's like, hey, filmmaking class, dance class, chorus, you know, like, I don't, interpretive dance movements to, like, 80s hip-hop. You know, it's like there's so many different things that you can be involved in. And we get to the end of the week sometimes, and I'm like, I feel like I was just an Uber for you. Because it's just your schedule driving my schedule, and, you know, and all of us have schedules, and you get color-coded. I don't know if you have color-coding in your digital calendar to, like, keep track of the human beings and where the human beings need to be and when they need to be and, like, how long they need to be there. And I, like, one of my reoccurring nightmares is I'm going to take Ella to the wrong place and pick her up at the wrong time because there is no standardized time. It's like 4:43 over here and 5:17 over here and 7 p.m. this night, but it's 8 p.m. a different night for that same kind of same location. And I just, like, my wife, hey, can you pick up Ella? And I'm like, what time does she get out of school? Because I don't trust my brain sometimes. And because one time I got there at 3:12, and I'm pretty sure when she's 40 and in counseling, they're going to blame everything that happened in her life at my, like, 3:12 pickup, because I get reminded of that. Well, you know, Dad, you picked me up late that day. And I'm like, yes, I remember. Thank you for reminding me all the time. Okay? I mean, it's just, we get overcommitted. And this idea of, like, some of us being able to work from home, it was great in theory, but then you realize there's work at home too. And all of a sudden you're managing home and work and life and Zoom, and just everything gets shoved in, and the ability to compartmentalize gets harder. And it just can feel overwhelming and overcommitted. And on top of that, we're just overexposed from social media that's constantly reminding us how we don't measure up, how there's someone better at the sport than you are, how there's someone who's being looked at by that college. We see everyone's highlight reels. We see everyone's awesome vacations. We see everyone else's family can take a picture together, smiling, looking at the camera, but ours can't. We're just reminded of how awesome everyone's life is and how it doesn't seem to look like our life. And on top of that, the average American is exposed in the course of a day just by picking up a newspaper from, like, the New York Times, that we can be exposed in one day to more information than a human being 100 years ago would have had their entire life. I mean, sometimes people are like, don't you feel like the world's worse? Don't you feel like it's even, like, when you were growing up compared to now? And I'm like, not really. The reality is that when I was growing up, I didn't know where Uzbekistan was. I didn't know what was playing out in Iran. I had no clue of tornadoes when they swept through Arkansas. They just, now we live in a day and an age where when something bad happens somewhere around the world, It's in front of you in a news feed. Like, I don't know about you, but my heart's been broken what played out in Nashville. It's 100 years ago, a tragedy in a city that you didn't live near wouldn't have even crossed your mind. But now, if you're a parent, you're driving down the street and you're having to explain why a flag is flying at half-mast. And I'm trying to unpack what happens to an 11-year-old because they're her peers. And how do I unpack that news story? We're just, I mean, it's just so much. And then we're supposed to do life and kind of make our way through, and it just leaves us with exhaustion. Right? That's the word I think living on the struggle bus eventually gets you to, right? An exhaustion that isn't fixed by sleep. You ever had that tired, you're so tired, but sleep doesn't fix it. You're so overwhelmed, and what happens is we fall into this trap. We're so exhausted that we, you know, we'll doom scroll on social media, we'll TikTok dance videos, and all of a sudden start caring about how people cut onions. And like, I mean, we'll go down rabbit holes and look up and be like, oh my goodness, it has been 45 minutes and I've been in this bathroom on the toilet, right? Like, it's just like, what in the world just happened? Why? Because we're trying to find escape. We're trying to find an ability to kind of ignore the fact that we're on the struggle bus. As if somehow noise cancellation headphones can silence what's going on inside of us. Because it's the internal pressure that's building up. And we think, oh, if I could just get that vacation, if I can just make it to that vacation. And we go on the vacation, we come back, and we discover, because we're not rested, we're more exhausted, that it turns out when your problem is the time on, not the time off doesn't fix it. Time away does not fix the problem when the problem is there when you come back. And we, you know, try to reclaim our day by binge watching whatever season it happens to be or whatever show it happens to be, and 6 hours later, like, Jenny and I will frequently be like, tomorrow us is going to hate us. Because today us is like, we can watch another show. Today us is like, we can stay up a little later. And then tomorrow us is like, yesterday us was an idiot. Because I'm tired and I'm exhausted. But we're looking for escape. And Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. He says it this way, like, I want to give you an exchange, not escape. I want to change out the weight that you feel. I want to exchange with you the chaos and the lack of peace. I want to give you peace, rest, not escape. Because a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, or if you go to Walmart, a box of wine, like, they wear off the next day. The shows eventually run out. And we have to come to terms with the way we try to escape isn't letting us escape. And then Jesus comes along and says, I want to give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Now, this is an interesting phrase, because I know for the crowd listening that day, it would have been an instant, like, image in their head. For us, the take my yoke upon you sounds very bizarre. You're like, I don't know if I want your yoke, because what's a yoke, right? Like, tell me what a yoke is first, and then I'll decide. And this is a yoke. A yoke was, you can kind of picture it, if I like did this right here, it would sit on your shoulders and the chains would hang down, and it would allow you to strap them to heavy weights so that you could walk with it on your shoulders, so you could carry something your arms couldn't carry. You could move something that you wouldn't be able to hold. And this was called a yoke. This was a common thing. And if a yoke was designed well, it would rest on your shoulders well and balance out the weight. And when Jesus says, take my yoke upon you, he's invoking this image. Everyone would have known instantly what a yoke was and what he was offering. And when he says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, then they really began to understand, because this was not just a physical item that was commonly seen through the markets in the course of the day. Like, this was the ancient equivalent of a shopping cart, right? So imagine walking through Wegmans or Target, and you've got this on you, and you're dragging like a pallet with all your groceries on top. Like, that was just the norm back then. And he says, learn from me, because this was also a metaphor for religion, for faith, and for a lifestyle of faith. So when the invitation is to take his yoke and learn from him, he's acknowledging the weariness and the burdenness, not just of life, but of faith too, for most people. That the rabbis in the day would commonly say they wanted to give you their yoke, which was their lifestyle, the way they lived and experienced, and the way they did and taught the Jewish faith. And Jesus comes along and says, no, I want to give you mine. I want you to learn from me as your rabbi, as your teacher. Because the common rabbi's teachings did not produce anything remotely light. It did not produce rest. It was weary. It was burdensome. It was guided and weighed down by guilt. That what drove you in your faith was guilt. All the things that you couldn't measure up to, all the things that you couldn't do right, all the rules and the boxes that you would never check because you did not measure up to the standard. And you just were weighed down by guilt, always concerned that God was in heaven angry at you, mad at you, giving you the spiritual cold shoulder. So when you prayed, you didn't know. And you would try to do things hoping to cajole him or convince him or to manipulate him to get him to do what you're asking him to do, but constantly plagued by if you died in a moment, you weren't sure where you stood with him. And you're like, did I do that? Did I say that? Did I pray that? Did I check that box? And it produced this overwhelmed, guilt-ridden, shame-based life. And he's like, no, learn from me. Take my approach to God the Father, not the ones that you've been taught and exposed to that just leave you more distant from God, feeling more guilty and even further burdened by shame that you can't. I mean, when you're told all the ways you're never going to measure up with no hope of ever finding a way that you can, guilt and shame grows. It doesn't shrink. And this is where they're stuck. And then Jesus steps in and he says, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. This is the first point where he is pointing to a deeper level, to a deeper invitation of a rest that's in spite of the storm, a peace in spite of the chaos. Not a promise of some pie in the sky God genie who waves his wand and all of a sudden your kids listen to you, or you make the sports team, or you got all A's, or now you're popular and everyone likes you, or your bank account is finally growing, right? Or you've got the dream job. No, in spite of not having any of those things, you still have rest for your souls. The picture of a child who, in the midst of their grief and their pain, because it's, as a parent, it's always amazed me, even though I was a kid and I did it, but like how my mom's hug could somehow help me feel better, even when the boo-boo was still there, even when even when I was still bleeding, even when it was still hurting and broken, somehow her hug could make me feel better. It could lighten my load. And I've seen that play out with my own kids, where instinctively, like both of our kids in those moments will say the words, Can I have a hug? Because they realize there's something about being wrapped up in our arms. It doesn't change their circumstances. But there's an exchange. There's peace. There's rest. And if you've ever had an infant, you can see it, and literally their body relaxes and they stop crying. And he's saying, hey, you never outgrow that. The reason you wanted that as a kid is because you were made to experience that with me. Like now, if I got hurt, I would never be like, Mom, can I have a hug? I think she still has that impulse. She'd want to give me a hug and be like, step back, woman. I'm a strong man. I don't need it, right? And that happened when I think I was probably around 8 years old and I became a man and I started playing Super Mario Brothers and I defeated World 1 and I realized there was nothing that could stop me on planet Earth. I had arrived, right? Like something clicked inside of me and I was tough, but the reality is that who I am inside never, ever grew up. And I still want that. But the problems are so much more bigger than boo-boos and scrapes and cuts and someone calling me a silly name on a playground. Now they're heavy. They're bills that haven't been paid. They're doctor's visits that I'm afraid of what they might say. There's the job that's sucking the life out of you every single day. And we just start to say, well, you know, I don't think there's a way. And then Jesus steps into the conversation and says, I want to give you rest for your souls. I want to offer a whole different way of life than what you're experiencing on the struggle bus. And what I love about what he says next that I think is so key that like I said, my kids even recognize is that there's something when this is the only time Jesus actually ever uses this phrase in all the biographical accounts. We have 4 different biographical accounts of the life of Jesus written by people who traveled with him, who spent extensive time with him, or like Luke, extensively researched and studied his life from eyewitnesses like Mary, his mother. And all of these very, very accurate personal kind of biographical accounts, this phrase of like, here's my heart, gets used in this statement, this moment only. He says, I am gentle and humble in heart. Like you're overwhelmed by faith. You feel so guilty. You feel so trapped. He's like, you'll find them gentle. I'm not sharpening my lightning bolt waiting for you to walk through the door. I'm not sitting there nodding like, yep, I told you that would happen. I'm not sitting there with the slideshow of all the moments you failed me. So when you walk through the door, it's playing on the screen behind me, passive aggressively, right? With some 90s punk rock song. It's just, he's gentle. And he's humble in heart. It's like, I want this for you. This is my yoke I've created. I want to give you rest. And I don't know about you, but that's what I want. That's what I want to live in. It's what I want to experience. I mean, this has been, for our family, like a crazy week. We've had the egg drop, but I don't really do anything with that. That's an amazing team of people, and I just stand on the stage and try not to look stupid and embarrass people. But like I was dealing with all these other things we've had this major roof leak, so we're negotiating a roof contractor because we've got to replace the entire roof. So we're kind of walking through that season and kind of navigating all of the implications of that. And then my son develops this weird cough in the week. And over the last 4 weeks, he's had pneumonia. We have not been able to figure out. We've gone through 4 different some nasty tasting antibiotic spreads trying to like kind of crush it, and it's been in the same spot of his lung, and that's partially collapsed that they can't figure out. And then, you know, Thursday night, you know, neither one of us sleep hardly at all, and it's just like something's not right with him. And Jenny takes him to the doctor on Friday, and we're out setting up the field, and she's like, oh, by the way, they're taking us to the hospital. His oxygen levels are too low. They've got to put an IV and antibiotics. And they're like, oh, okay. And, you know, my daughter's got her calendar and all the things she's got going on. And just through the course of the week and, like, the fact that, you know, we last night we egg drop and we swing by the hotel, because that's what it felt like, the hospital, the drop-off stuff for Jenny, and then rush Ella home and get to bed. The message I originally written for you, like at 10:30, you know, around 11 last night, I realized was just a bomb and was not going to be very helpful for you. So I literally threw that message out last night around 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. and started writing this message, and then finished it this morning. And it's like, both Jenny and I are like concerned with our son and all that. And you know what's amazing? In the midst, I tell you all that not to be dramatic, because I'm really a private person and don't want you in my business. But, okay, I tell you all that to say that, like, yesterday, if you'd bumped into me, you wouldn't have known. And I would joke, because people would ask, they're like, oh, and they're like, I compartmentalize well. I don't compartmentalize well. It's just me being like, I got to speak on the stage. I don't want to talk about this right now. What it was is that Jesus' promise is real. That we can have peace in the midst of chaos. And that ultimately, I think probably why I landed on this message last night was because I've lived this message this week. Like, I'm not walking around kicking cats and lashing out and cursing at my TV remote. I mean, I haven't watched TV, but if I did, you know, it didn't work. I didn't do any of that. It's not because of me. It's because of the genius of what he says when he says, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And you can say, well, that doesn't sound like an easy week. That doesn't sound very light. But the genius is what he says, from my yoke. So here's the thing I didn't tell you. So Jesus was a carpenter for most of his adult years. He would have apprenticed under Joseph. He would have learned the trade. I imagine, because he's Jesus, that like his Yelp Google reviews would have been like extraordinary, like, I brought my busted up table to Jesus and he made it even better. Like, could you imagine, like, something breaks and you go to Jesus to get it fixed and you're like, best table ever, right? I mean, it's just like, it would have been mind-blowing. Like, if he had been doing this when there was a Target, there would have been temptation to like have his line of furniture in every Target, because it has just been like, man, this man's furniture is phenomenal. And one of the things that carpenters made were yokes. So when he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, it's actually, I'm like, Jesus, you're funny. Because he's talking about a metaphorical yoke. But he actually made real yokes. Like, there were actual people who had yoke by Jesus. Like, as a real thing. Like, walking the streets. And they probably made other people jealous, because they're, like we do with everything, right? The guys out there, and they're like, hey, that looks, oh, man, this thing's amazing. It's like, wham, 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 wham. Like, it cuts through. You won't see this right. I cut that tree down with my weed whacker. Right? And it's like, where did you get that from? And it's like, well, I got this place down the road. I found this little model, you know. And it's like, man, that's amazing. I want one of them. I think people were like, yo, your yoke looks easy and light. Where did you get that from? This carpenter named Jesus. Right? So, like, I just think it's kind of funny that it probably played out in actual real life conversation. In real life, right? And so Jesus comes along as a carpenter who made yokes, and he's now the spiritual teacher with a spiritual yoke, and he's saying that my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And a yoke that was light was a yoke that was made well, that enabled you and your whole body to take the weight in a way that didn't weigh you down. Really good carpenters were known for making really good yokes. And really bad carpenters were known for making yokes that just made you feel more weighed down. It's just like the sense of humor of God to put Jesus in an apprenticeship for a carpenter, knowing this would be a statement that would be made one day, is just not lost on me. But I told you there was an image that would have came to mind. There was actually two yokes carpenters made that were common in the first century. And I think it's the second yoke that gives a little bit more insight to why this statement, because this week was not easy and this week was not light, but this week did not crush me or weigh me down. I still found myself praying. Like last night in the car driving home, just modeling this for my daughter, because she was so sad because mom, she sang at Providence Bruins games last night with her school, and she was so sad because mom wasn't there and mother-in-law didn't fly in, and she's, you know, like, he's in the hospital, it's not fair, it's, you know, all this stuff that just gets churned up naturally, and I was like, Ella, you know what's cool? Henry's been alive almost 1,000 days, and he's only spent like 3 days in the hospital his entire life. I was like, you know, what's that percentage? And she's like, you're trying to trick me into math right now. Right? And I'm like, what is that? And we're like doing the math. We're like, how crazy? And I'm like, it's 99.7% of his life has been in our home with us or in a hotel with us that our family's been together. It's 0.3 that we're living through right now. Like, man, God, thank you so much for the 99.7. I'm so grateful for that. And then because I had tricked her into math, she was like, did you say hundredths or tenths? And I was like, yes, it's tenths. And it's like, isn't that crazy? And I said, let's think about your life, almost 4,000 days. Or my life, which is a lot more days. And never spent the night in a hospital. Like, we are so fortunate. And just the following him. And this is the image of the second yoke. And the way this yoke worked is you would have two oxen. You'd have an oxen over here. And then you'd have an oxen over here. And sometimes this oxen would be exhausted, would be tired. And it didn't matter how weak this oxen got, because in some magic of physics, the strength of this oxen would allow this oxen to continue to go forward. Because you don't add up, when you put two oxen in a yoke, you don't add up the 2,000 pounds and the 3,000 pounds to get 5,000. It's more like 11,000 pounds. It's a multiplication effect, not just addition. And the fact that Jesus is saying, take my yoke, is easy and light, is not that my yoke and the way of life isn't challenging. It doesn't have difficulties. It's that I am bearing more of the weight, not giving you a life filled with less. And that he has been the thing. He has been the one on this side. His strength, his Holy Spirit, enabling and empowering and giving peace in the midst of chaos. That he's the reason that I could last night throw out this message that I didn't think would serve you very well and start all over in this message. Because I literally prayed, God, they're your people. And what they need is your word and your teaching and their life. And I feel like what I have for them is not going to be enough. And it wasn't on me to write a speech. It was on me to remind myself who's over there. And that he cares more about you than I care about you. That he has a plan for you. He knows what you're walking through. And that his heartbeat and his invitation is still, take my yoke upon you. For my burden is light. It's easy. Not because it's less difficult, but because of his Spirit, that he bears more, that he gives strength, that he gives power. And that over this next month, that's the conversation I want to help you lean into. And it starts with that simple statement. He says, come to me, all who are weary, heavy burden, learn from me. And this is where the exchange happens, is over the next month and the conversations that we're going to have around this struggle bus. It's up to you and self-awareness to recognize the areas where you are weary, where you are burdened, where you are giving, and instead of taking the exchange, you just keep chasing after the escape. For you to simply say, okay, God, I see it, and it's crushing me. I want to learn from you. And if that is where you are, whether middle school, elementary school, high school, college, adulthood, right? No matter where you are, no matter who you are, if your posture is like, man, I want rest. I want peace. I don't want to live under the weight of crushing pressure that I can't tell anyone else I don't feel like I can keep holding up. But you can tell God. And if that's where you are, then you've picked the perfect month to come to Encounter Church. Because that's the conversation. How do we get off this struggle bus? But even better, when we find ourselves on it, how we can actually even enjoy the ride. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for your teaching, for your goodness, and for your love, Dad. For the way that you even in your heart, that you care about us, that you are for us, that you offer to us an exchange, which is far better than escape, that you offer for us healing and strength and peace and joy. Thank you, Dad, that those lines in the New Testament are not empty, pie-in-the-sky, religious, fanatical notions, but they are real promises that we can be lived, experienced, and demonstrated in our lives. And thank you for this week and the insanity of our family, for what you've given us, because it's in those moments that we are reminded that your yoke really is easy and your burden really is light, because you are present with us, that you give strength to us. And I pray that this week, for those, Lord, who are in the midst of a season of riding on the struggle bus that's just been overwhelming and exhausting, that they would find, even as we close out today in the song, that the invitation to come to me is still extended to us today, like it was 2,000 years ago. For those who are maybe skeptical, unsure, sitting on the sidelines, God, I pray that you would give them the courage and humility to lean in this month and say, okay, God, help me to learn. Help me to see your way and how it might be better than my way. And God, thank you. That regardless of where we are, what we find ourselves in, that your promises still remain. In Jesus' name, amen. So today we're going to close out.